Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Pretty much since this current election cycle started, the notion that politicians, like presidential candidates Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, are liars has been thrown around a lot. Our next guest is Daniel Levitin. He teaches at the Keck Graduate Institute in San Francisco, at the UC Berkeley Business School, and he's a professor of psychology and behavioral neuroscience at McGill University. And he's got a new book, A Field Guide to Lies, Critical Thinking in the Information Age. And you may be familiar with his previous book, This Is Your Brain on Music, or The Organized Mind, or from his popular TED Talk, How to Stay Calm When You Know You'll Be Stressed. So, Daniel Levitin, thanks for coming on WNYC today.
My pleasure, Brian.
What's a lie?
Well, I think a lie is anything that isn't true. Whether we could have a conversation about whether there has to be intentionality, whether somebody's trying to deceive you or not. But I'm more interested in helping people to only accept things that are verifiable and true, and not use up neural resources on things that are untrue.
By helping us improve our critical thinking skills. And one of the things that you do near the beginning of the book is identify two different kinds of experts. What are they, and why is that important?
Well, there are experts that really and truly know what they're talking about. Take the case of a Nobel Prize winner in physics. If he's talking about his domain of physics, he's truly an expert. You can't do much better than that. But if he starts talking about genetics, or as the Nobel Prize winner William Shockley did at some point, arguing that a particular class of Americans were genetically inferior, he's out of his element. We tend to think, oh, well, he's so smart. He won a Nobel Prize. He must know what he's talking about. But as you know, Brian, this is how you make your living, by bringing in experts. Expertise is domain-specific.
And so there are those who can speak to their actual expertise, and I guess you're saying there are a lot who go on the media who speak as if they're experts without actually being experts.
Right. We have to be able to tell the difference, because there aren't necessarily gatekeepers helping us to tell the difference.
And you also cite two different kinds of reporters.
Well, yes, there are reporters who will simply go with a press release and run it, and then there are reporters who ask the important questions. Is this really true? Can I verify this? What do other people who have some expertise have to say about this? And, of course, these are cornerstones of proper journalism. You know, we started saying a few years ago that just because you have a camera and your cell phone doesn't make you a photographer. Well, just because you can tweet or type something doesn't make you a journalist. Journalism, like science and actually like the practice of the law, requires scrupulous fact-checking.
Many people, general public, politicians, journalists, are with regularity accusing the current presidential candidates of lying about many things. But are you saying we need to rely on experts and journalists who we deem to be credible to pick that apart for us? Is that the best way to use our critical thinking skills that you're trying to help us develop?
I think there are three things we can do, Brian. First, we can understand that there's a hierarchy of information sources out there. Some are better than others. Public radio and the New York Times are more likely to be correct and accurate than, say, TMZ. Now, I'm not saying TMZ is always wrong. I'm just looking at the percentages. The second thing is we can rely on experts. There are sites like PolitiFact that are fact-checking what candidates say. If we are arguing about campaign finance reform, we could talk to an expert who's had experience working in that domain, as you just did. In the third case, I think all of us can just start to take a little more time to apply some critical thinking skills that are part of the training of journalists and scientists and lawyers They're not that complicated, and I lay them out in the book, which I think is accessible to anybody over the age of 14. There are things like, is the claim even plausible? If it involves numbers, do the numbers make sense? Before you and I got on the phone, I heard a radio ad on a commercial radio station for a new product that's supposed to help people over the age of 50 with increasing blood circulation. It'll improve their sex lives. It'll increase their cognitive capacity. The product is $60 a bottle. For a month's worth of pills or so. And when you go and you see what's in it, it's a bunch of stuff that you can get a lot cheaper, like green tea extract and vitamin B6 and, you know, an amino acid that's present in the foods in a normal American diet. And so it doesn't add up. I think that's an application of critical thinking. Just take a look.
And we should mention that though we've been talking mostly in the segment about analyzing political statements, your book applies to other fields as well, for instance, medical outbreaks. So when we experience big medical stories like Zika right now, for example, most people turn to journalists, not necessarily doctors, for their information. So what do you think are some key things people should understand when reading about science and medicine?
Well, one thing is that a single experiment doesn't usually tell you very much that's useful. The unit of currency in medicine and science is what we call the meta-analysis, which is just a fancy name for somebody who goes through a whole bunch of studies and tries to find some trends. There's a controversy now about dental care. It turns out that some studies show that flossing helps. Some show that it doesn't make any difference. And this comes from a meta-analysis. It doesn't mean you should stop flossing, but it means that you have to take a broad view of experimentation, of the studies that are being done. The other thing with medical things is look closely at the numbers and all of us can learn what kinds of follow-up questions it can be useful to ask to push the conversation forward. As an example, if your doctor wants to put you on a new drug that will lower your risk of heart attack by half, you have to ask the question, well, what was my risk beforehand? If you're talking about changing the risk from 1 in 1 million to 1 in 500,000, you know, maybe that's not worth the side effects.
And you try to inoculate us against a certain kind of spin that you call counter-knowledge. What is counter-knowledge?
Well, counter-knowledge cloaks itself in the terminology of science and rigor by using technical terms, but it's intended to get you to believe things that aren't true. We see this a lot in advertising. We see it among conspiracy theorists. And you just have to take a step back and ask yourself, does this make sense? For example, one of the big conspiracy theories about 9/11, one of the principles they always say is, well, if an airplane crashed into a tower, a building, it wouldn't fall apart that way. That's not consistent. And, well, you know, this gets back to our earlier question of expertise. If you talk to demolitions experts and people who have expertise in explosives, they'll tell you, well, yeah, that's exactly how a building would fall if it was hit by a plane. It's not consistent with the idea that somebody placed explosives strategically throughout the Twin Towers.
Daniel Levitin, author of A Field Guide to Lies, Critical Thinking in the Information Age. Thanks for giving us some additional tools for critical thinking.
My pleasure, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, we'll ask New York Times national immigration reporter Julia Preston and Juan Manuel Benitez, host of Puerto Politica, the politics show on New York One Noticias, New York One's Spanish language news channel, whether Donald Trump cleared up all that confusion that he sowed last week about his position on immigration in his speech last night. Stay with us.